And did you hear on my mind every hour of the day without your sweet inspiration?
Everybody, it's Tuesday night, it's 7 p.m. on the left coast, and it's time for the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. This is Tammy Jackson welcoming you to an hour of sweet conservative inspiration. If you'd like to do so, go ahead and interact with comments and questions on Twitter during the show, and follow me at Tammy J. That's T-A-M-I-J. Now, my first guest tonight is Paul Brown. At 18, he volunteered to serve the nation as a U.S. Marine. Gotta love those leathernecks. He was later commissioned as a medical officer in the U.S. Navy. After his election to Congress, Dr. Brown continued to practice medicine in his role as a medical officer in the U.S. Navy Reserves and was promoted from lieutenant commander to commander in the Navy Reserves. Paul was deployed to Afghanistan, where he treated sick and injured Marines and soldiers. It gets really interesting here, because as a military doctor, he treated patients in the Navy Health Clinic at Marine Base Quantico and at the Brigade Medical Center and the U.S. Naval Academy. He was honorably discharged in 2014. As you can tell, he's deeply devoted to medical care for our wounded warriors and veterans. Paul and his wife, Nikki, have been married since 1985. They have three adult children, two grandchildren. Dr. Paul Brown, welcome to the show, and thank you for your service.
Well, it was an honor to serve, Ms. Jackson, and I'll tell you, it was a great honor to be in Afghanistan and see the young men and young women who are serving our military over there. And you're absolutely correct. We've got to take care of our veterans. It's actually a national security issue that we do so. And unfortunately, the Department of Veterans Affairs is not taking care of our veterans, nor is the Department of Defense taking care of people the way that they should. And it's just a shame. It's something that our government has failed in its promises to our veterans. And it absolutely is critical that we do fulfill those promises so that we can have good people in the military to be senior enlisted people, senior NCOs, as we call them, senior officers, as well as the flag officers, those the generals and admirals. And so it's something that I've been very interested in, and hopefully we can eventually get Congress to do the right thing and start taking care of our veterans.
Man, I would love that. A couple years ago, I had a couple on, Dr. Lloyd and Mary Byers, actually Baptist missionaries. And I had found out, I'd done a Pinterest board that I wanted to do for Memorial Day and then for Veterans Day. But I wanted pictures of fellas in their uniforms. And if any had died serving the country, their next of kin sent them to me. And I created what I called my kind of miniature wall that was a memorial to the guys that had served. And the pictures I got were just absolutely phenomenal, including a picture of a young man named Josh Byers, who died over in Afghanistan, I believe, or was it? It was Iraq. And his story was so incredible. It was one of his teachers at the academy that said, "This is the finest young man that I've ever had the privilege of teaching and mentoring, who has wanted to be to serve his country his whole life." His parents were hoping maybe he'd just be a missionary like them, and he taught Sunday school, but he wanted to be a warrior. And he went over there, and to a man, everybody in his unit could not say enough good about him. And he perished in a Humvee when they hit an IED on the road, and he knew from his training that they needed to keep going forward. And that was the name of the book that Dr. Byers wrote as a memoir for his son, so that people could learn about a life of intention, lived well. And he actually bled out as they drove forward. He didn't want them to stop and tend to him, but he saved the other men in the vehicle, in the Humvee. And I searched for 4 years to find his parents and finally had him on the show. So Gold Star parents, and I acquainted not only with them, but his two brothers that just every Memorial Day, that family has that loss staring them in the face, even though they know they'll see him again. But it just touches my heart so much, Dr. Brown, that we have men and women that are willing to put their lives on the line to pay that last full measure of devotion. And we need to be giving them our absolute best.
Absolutely, and thank you for doing that. In fact, this Memorial Day was very somber for me. Unfortunately, most Americans see Memorial Day as just a day to go out and drink beer and cook out on the grill, or maybe go to the pool or go down to the beach at Salishan there in Oregon or something like that. And it's I know Oregon. I lived there for a while. I was an intern at Good Samaritan Hospital up in Portland.
Oh my goodness!
So I loved Oregon. Yes, the problem is that people just look at all across America, for the most part, look at Memorial Day as just a 3-day weekend or just the beginning of summer, and they don't stop to think what it's all about. And it's people like this young man that you're talking about. I had, when I was elected to Congress, right shortly afterwards in 2008, we had a Marine First Sergeant from my community, Luke Mercandante, who got blown up in his Humvee as well and was killed. And I have spent a lot of time praying for the Mercadante family during this Memorial Day, actually for a week prior to Memorial Day. But we need to start looking at what made this country great. And it's the men and women in uniform. Unfortunately, Tammy, most people in this country are at the malls, or they're at the bowling alley, or they're fishing or taking care of their family. They're not at war. Only the military is at war. Frankly, we should not be in Afghanistan or Iraq. We should not have gone to Afghanistan, to Vietnam, or even Korea, in my opinion. But be as it may, the military goes when they're called. And a lot of them come back with their legs blown off, or they come back with their emotions all scrambled up and have PTSD and other things such as that. And it's just a shame that America doesn't pay more attention to those. So I thank you so much for what you did and what you're doing, and just tonight promoting what Memorial Day should be all about. And that's those people who sacrificed their lives and their limbs for this country, for the freedoms and liberty that we have. And frankly, we're losing it because we're leaving the foundational principles that made this country great. And we've got to go back to those too. I'm an original intent constitutionalist. I looked at a little information about you, and I understand you believe in the Constitution as our founding fathers meant for it to be.
Right.
A strong military should be the major function of the federal government.
Yes.
Taking care of our veterans is part of that. And, the federal government shouldn't be doing most of the things that it's doing today.
Right.
But we should have a strong military. We're not taking care of our troops. Thankfully, with this this omnibus bill that Congress passed recently, we've upped the funding for our military. We have some movement to try to help take care of our veterans, but it's not enough. We don't have enough. We don't have enough brigades in the Army. We don't have enough ships in the Navy. We don't have enough wings in the Air Force. And God knows we don't have enough Marines. We need to have more, and we need to supply them with everything that they need so that hopefully we don't ever have to go to war.
Right.
I believe very firmly, like Ronald Reagan did, in peace through strength. We've got to have the biggest, baddest military in the whole wide world, and people need across this world globe need to be fearful of our military and just shake when they think about what might happen. And if we ever go to war, we should go to war. We should go with the intent of winning very quickly, doing everything that we have to do to win quickly, and then come back home. And we have not done that since World War II.
Yep. Yep. No, I agree 100%. I get so emotional around Memorial Day. I had two great uncles that served in World War II, served honorably. They came home whole, but very quiet about it, very humble. That generation just didn't, there wasn't any braggadocio. It was just, we did what a good American should do, was their attitude. They were tremendous. And then I had two cousins. They were my mom's first cousins that were in Vietnam. One was a Marine. In the DMZ in the hot zone. He made it home alive. A lot of his unit did not. And as I talk to him today, it's just amazing. And it reminds me, the verse I had at the top of my Pinterest board was one I'm sure you're well familiar with, John 15:13, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. So what our warriors do, whether they intend to or not, but it's a Christ-like act that they're doing, sacrificing themselves on our behalf. And one movie, I bet you've seen this, but one movie I suggest that parents and their teenagers watch is called Taking Chance, and it was made by HBO. It is an amazing movie of a Marine officer who's pretty much riding a desk because he wants to go home safely to his family every night. He's feeling guilty that he's doing desk duty. And I want to say he's a colonel, lieutenant colonel perhaps. But he decides, he sees a young man who is a fallen, who is from his hometown, so he thinks, and he puts in a request to be the accompaniment to accompany the body from its landing stateside to its final resting place. And it follows that whole thing. And it is so moving. It's unbelievable. But I really think that teenagers on should watch that movie to understand just the import of what these men and women do when they write that blank check that could end up costing their lives.
Absolutely. In fact, every single person who is wearing the uniform of the United States military serves, whether they're actually in active combat or whether they're are a supply sergeant or some desk clerk somewhere, it's absolutely critical for the whole of the safety and basically for the security of this nation, for every single person that's serving in the military. So whether someone's in combat or not, I applaud what this colonel did. I'll tell you something that I watched, if you haven't seen it, and you can go on YouTube and watch a little video. It's about 4.5 minutes, I think, called Angel Flight.
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, I put it on my Facebook page and shared it with my friends, you know, near and far, and I absolutely positively loved it.
Yep, that's right. So anyway, thank you. You didn't want to talk to me about the military and the veterans, I don't think, but it's just something that's very deep in my heart and something that I'm really concerned about, because going back to the original thing that I said about the Constitution and liberty and freedom that we have in this country is due to our military, and we're actually harming what has made this country great. My whole calling politically has come from a scripture. It's a question God asked in Psalm 11:3, and the question is, if the foundations be destroyed, what are the righteous to do? We're having Republicans and Democrats, even so-called conservative Republicans, destroying the foundational principles that made this country great. They're not voting according to their oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution against enemies, both foreign and domestic. I many times went to the floor of the U.S. House, and when I was in the Congress, and said that we've got domestic enemies of the Constitution, and they're the leaders of this here House. And yes, That's in both parties.
Yes.
We really do. And it's, Tammy, the only sovereign entity in our country today, sovereign, king-like entity, is we the people.
Right.
And we the people are going to have to stand up and say, we're absolutely disgusted with what you people in Washington are doing. We want our country back. We're going to restore the foundational principles. We demand that those powers that are not specifically granted to government by the Constitution. In other words, for Congress, the 18 enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8, Supreme Court and all the federal courts, only the 5 powers that they're given in Article 3, only the powers given to the president in Article 2, are you going to do? And we're not going to put up with this anymore because we're losing our liberty and freedom. We're headed to an economic collapse of this nation because of this out-of-control spending and out-of-control government. It just has to stop.
Yep.
Just there in Oregon, back years ago, you had a congressman from Eastern Oregon, Congressman Bob Smith, who is a friend of mine.
Yes, I'm actually from Bend, Oregon, Central Oregon. That's where I was raised, yes.
Oh, well, Bob Smith was a good friend, and I know Ben. I used to go down there and ski.
Yep. I grew up skiing on Mount Bachelor.
Yeah, me too. Well, I didn't grow up skiing there, but I skied Mount Hood and Mount Batch. Had a little cabin at North Junction on the Deschutes River.
Yes.
Every for years, the Memorial Day weekend, I would go fishing with them, because we had the salmon hatch on the Deschutes.
Right.
Usually around Memorial Day or Flag Day, in that 2 or 3 day or week period of time, and I loved Eastern Oregon. But we've got to go back to, but you look at Bob Smith, who was a conservative.
Right.
And even now, Greg Walden.
Good guy here in Oregon.
Well, he's not really a conservative, though.
No, but he's the closest we've got right now.
Oh, absolutely. And he's a good friend of mine. I appreciate Greg. I know Portland was a friend. He and I were on exactly the far opposite ends of the political spectrum. He's about as liberal and communist as you can get, and I'm about as freedom-loving and liberty-loving constitutionalist as you can get. But we can still be friends, and we are. In fact, he still owes me a fine bottle of Willamette Valley Pinot Noir.
We've got a lot of that. Good vineyards here. Hey, Dr. Brown, we've got to take a break. I will be back with my guest, Dr. Paul Brown, and we're going to talk about some interesting stuff, maybe Israel, maybe evolution, Obamacare. We'll see how much we can cram in. The Tammy Jackson Show is sponsored by Robar Companies. They are a true custom firearms and firearms finishing shop. They're located in Phoenix, Arizona, found online at robarguns.com. Now, Robar has been committed to producing the finest custom firearms and finishes on the markets for 35 years. Yeah, this year marks the 35th anniversary, and Robar is cooking up some great items and customizations to celebrate this anniversary. So I want you to stay tuned in the subsequent weeks. I'll be letting you in on, I'm helping with this, roll out some of this stuff, and it's going to be fabulous. So you will want to know how Robar plans to commemorate the anniversary in a big, big way. And remember, if you want to give your worn firearm new life, or you want a custom firearm, then go ahead and check out robarguns.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405. Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
I love Tammy.
I love you back, Kurt, because I'm a caring kind of gal.
The Tammy Jackson Show.
I'm just one conservative gal encouraging you to keep fighting the good fight.
Tammy is what conservative insurgency is about.
Tammy Jackson, the granddaughter of legal immigrants.
In Honduras, they had 60,000 murders per 100,000 or something like that. And I thought, whoa, that is a lot.
Like every other person on the block is dead.
Tammy Jackson, the emerging threat from the West Coast.
Tammy has made herself into a rising radio star.
When we have these mass amounts just suddenly pour into the United States, we have a worse problem than we already have had with assimilation.
The Tammy Jackson Show, Tuesday nights, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, only on the 405media.com.
Anything for you, Tammy.
You're on the 405.
This is Mike from the Wrestling Mayhem Show, the show where we get fans and people in the wrestling industry together to talk about pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, WrestleMania, all kinds of fun. It's a podcast party. Check it out, Wrestling Mayhem Show, right here on the 405 Media.
Listen to the Wrestling Mayhem Show, now 7 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, right here on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
Let's talk tech. Tech news discussions from the people in the industry right here in Pittsburgh. Online, gadgets, startups, and more. Check it out at awesomecast.net.
AwesomeCast. It's all about tech, and it's all about gadgets. It's AwesomeCast, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
This is Tammy Jackson. I am back with my wonderful guest, Dr. Paul Brown. If you're just joining the show, you need to check out his whole bio on the show page. He graduated from University of Georgia and the Medical College of Georgia. He dedicated 4 decades to serving others through the practice of medicine. You can read about his military service, his service with the VA and other entities. And something I didn't mention, we talked about this a little bit during the break when you all couldn't hear, but Dr. Brown is an avid sportsman, a hunter, a life member of both the NRA and Gun Owners of America, good organizations. He's the past president of the Georgia Sports Shooters Association, the Georgia Wildlife Federation, former vice president of Safari Club International, a life member of Quail Unlimited, Trout Unlimited, and the Federation of Fly Fishermen. Oh my goodness, as I told you during the break, Dr. Brown, I'm making plans to have Al Robertson on the show with his dad, Phil, and they would call you a man after their own heart.
Well, they're men after my own heart, too, as well. So, in fact, it was my love of hunting and out of doors that got me politically active. I was concerned about my Second Amendment rights because people kept talking about that. Second Amendment had to do with sporting purposes and hunting, and that just didn't seem right to me for the founding fathers to be concerned about those issues. So I started studying what their original intent behind the Second Amendment is. And the original intent of that is to prevent tyranny. It's to protect so citizens could protect themselves from their own government. Of course, it's also about personal protection of life and property. But the real reason behind it was to make sure that we had an armed citizenry that could protect themselves from a tyrannical government. And that's what led me into studying the whole Constitution and seeing how far we've gotten away from the original intent. We only have 18 enumerated powers for Congress to pass laws about. Article 1, Section 1, Sentence 1 of the U.S. Constitution says that the Congress is the only branch of the federal government that can make law. That means that the courts cannot make law constitutionally, and every law that has been created by the federal court system all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court is unconstitutional.
Yes.
Presidents don't have the authority to make law either through executive order. It's only Congress. So executive orders are supposed to be in an administrative capacity only. It's not supposed to create new law. And we see presidents of both political parties creating law through executive order. And of course, Barack Obama is probably the worst of all of them, but George W. Bush and his daddy and Bill Clinton and the presidents of both political parties have been making unconstitutional law. And the people of this country just don't understand how far we've gotten away from those original principles. They don't understand how much liberty and freedom we have actually lost. Time magazine just a few years ago had on its cover that said, "We're all socialists now." And basically that's true.
Yeah.
We have
yeah.
become a socialist nation, and we're losing our liberty and freedom day by day. The Republicans in Congress are taking our liberty and freedom away. They're taking us down this road of economic collapse as well by creating more and more debt that is totally unsustainable, and it has to stop. And the only way it's going to stop is for the American people to rise up and say, we are not going to put up with this anymore. You've got to change your ways, or we're going to change you and put somebody in your place who's going to stand firm on the Constitution. That's the reason I encourage people, Tammy, to read the Constitution and then read what our founding fathers said about it. I highly recommend a resource. In fact, I tell people it's a great birthday present or Christmas present for grandkids or kids or parents or for grandparents, for anybody. And it's a book called The Federalist Papers in Modern Language. And it's been edited by Mary E. Webster. But the writers of that book did, they just transliterated from old style English, which is very difficult to read, into current English, all of the issues in the Federalist Papers. And people can see that, for instance, our founding fathers never, ever, ever meant for the federal government to control commerce as they are doing today through the Commerce Clause. That's actually a state limitation. It's to prevent the states from setting up barriers for interstate commerce. It was never intended for the Commerce Clause to be something that the federal government could control commerce. They wanted a free flow of commerce amongst the states as well as foreign commerce. And our federal government has turned that on its head. The General Welfare Clause means the general welfare of the nation, not welfare for Exxon or for any individual. So all of these welfare programs, whether it's corporate welfare or individual welfare, are all unconstitutional, and there's no room for them under a free people that's run by the limited enumerated powers of the U.S. Constitution. And I can go on and on and on, and we're just going to have to reclaim our liberty and freedom, Tammy.
We are. And you know what I decided, because we're going to have to wrap up in about a minute here, is that I need to have you back on, because we obviously could talk a lot longer than half an hour.
Yeah, well, I'd be glad to. You know how to get in touch with me. You've got my phone number. I left it on your on the voicemail message, because I called a little bit early and I left you my personal cell phone. So
okay.
Off that 310 voicemail machine and you got it.
Okay, well, we will keep it handy, because I want to talk to you a little bit about things like evolution, et cetera, because my dad actually was a research scientist in his career, but he's also head deacon at First Baptist Church in Bend, and he was a pastor in his retirement for 14 years. Now he's retired from that, but so he and I talked a whole lot about all this stuff. I learned critical thinking, et cetera, and so there's a lot we could talk about, but I've got to wrap up, and...
Sure.
Dr. Brown, it has just been a joy having you on. How fun has this been?
Well, it's been great for me. People can go on my campaign website from my last time of running, which was unsuccessful 2 years ago, paulbrown.com, and they can just look at who I am and what I'm all about. They can email me at paul@paulbrown.com, but I've got to spell Brown, because my family either can't spell or can't pronounce. We spell Brown, B-R-O-U-N. It's Brown with a U instead of a W. So it's paulbrown.com, P-A-U-L-B-R-O-U-N. And my email address is paul@paulbrown.com. I encourage people to get in touch with me. And let's take our country back, Tammy. We've got to start demanding a different kind of governance, and it's up to we the people to do so.
Amen. I'm with you 100%. And I've taught homeschoolers. I've done all this. And I agree with you ever so much. Dr. Brown, thanks again for making time to be on the show. I'll have you back again.
Well, please do. And we've got a lot in common. I accepted Jesus Christ personally as my Lord and Savior when I was in my mid-40s. And I started studying Scripture. And I found that all the stuff about evolution and old earth theory are just not scientifically supportable. There are a lot of scientific data that point to this earth being very, very young. And I don't believe the earth is but about 6,000 years old. And I made a statement that I'm attacked about all the time when I said that evolution, old earth theory, or just lies straight from the pit of hell, because they keep people from understanding that they need a savior. And I stick by that, because it's absolutely true.
I agree with you. I love it. It's wonderful stuff. And I will have you back. You take care, my friend.
Thank you much. God bless you, Tammy. Keep up the fight for liberty and freedom.
I will. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hey, you're listening to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'll be back on the other side of the break with Eric Seligman. The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by Camera Security Now. Camera Security Now sells and installs surveillance and access control systems for businesses worldwide. They are a site-wide surveillance system. It's the cost-effective way to provide instant access to all the visual information that's critical to your business. Camera Security Now can handle your largest surveillance projects while still providing easy-to-reach personal service. They have upfront pricing, itemized quotes, remote access to your surveillance system with no monthly fees, same-day virtual site visits, etc. You can rest assured your security needs are in capable hands. For more information, visit CameraSecurityNow.com. That's CameraSecurityNow.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405. Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
We are a bold and active voice for the unborn. We are Audio Girl Ministries, saving the lives of babies by helping moms in crisis pregnancies get past the crisis. How? Free ultrasound imaging so the woman can see the life she's carrying, and by supplying her with essential baby items, diapers, clothes, food, crib, car seat, all given with a loving and caring heart. Want to help? Log on to audiogirlministries.com. Make a tax-deductible donation. audiogirlministries.com. Thanks.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Tammy Jackson. I'm a little over halfway through the show, and now I'm joined by my guest, Eric Seligman. Did I pronounce that right, Eric?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. You never know for sure with some of these names. Eric Seligman is an engineer living in Hillsboro, Oregon, with his wife and sixth grade daughter. He attended Carnegie Mellon and Princeton University. He told me that was a long, long time ago. He acted like it was centuries ago. And of course, it was in the last century, but that's not that long ago. You're a formal verification architect at Intel. I don't really know what that is. Tell me what that is.
Basically, we try to mathematically prove that our chips are going to do what they're supposed to do.
Okay, well, okay, that makes sense to me, and good. I'm glad that's your job and not mine. But Eric Seligman served from 2013 to 2017 on the board of the Hillsboro School District, the fourth largest K-12 district in Oregon. And this is important stuff for everybody listening, especially my friends that are political wonks. You know how many heinous stories come out of my beloved state, Oregon, and a lot of them have to do with education in the state. It's either poor or it's completely politically correct to the point where a lot of parents are afraid to even have their kids in public schools. It's nonsense. So I appreciate friends that I know that are common sense conservatives that get on school boards. And it's not always all that easy. I have one friend that's on a school board here in the Tualatin area, and she says that she's a stealth agent because they don't realize that she's a conservative mom, and her kids are now at OSU, but she's doing what she can. You've done a few fun things, Eric, in that, you know, you've been busy with the school board, obviously with a kid, you're busy with that and with your career at Intel, but you started a podcast and you have what's called a fun math podcast called Math Mutation. You've done that for over 10 years and written two books on non-political topics. Why in the world did you start a math podcast?
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny. It's just because, you know, ever since I was little, I always liked reading books that had little cool facts about math, things like, you know, how you make wheels that aren't round and stuff like that. But, you know, when the whole podcasting revolution started around 2006, 2007, there were all these like little fun podcasts on all different topics and, you know, science and nature and animals and little things like that. But I didn't see any about math. So I, you know, bought a, you know, $10 microphone, hooked it up to my computer and thought I can start a podcast myself. And yeah, these days it is that easy.
That's really something. And one thing I was going to ask you, now you're originally, aren't you from New Jersey?
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
So how did you migrate here to Oregon, which my dad calls it God's country for the Gentiles, and he said not to tell other people about it or they'd all come here. But what brought you to Oregon?
Yeah, well, you know, I came out here for my job, basically.
Okay.
I had no idea what I was getting into when I first moved here.
My dad came from Iowa, and he'd gone to Iowa State, and then he was looking for a school that had a good forestry program. He wanted to get into soil science in particular, and he came out to go to OSU, and he had to do a lot of grad research over in Central Oregon along the Deschutes and a lot of the Ponderosa forest there, and he thought, holy cow, I didn't know there were states like this that were this gorgeous, and he thought, why was I living in the land of corn and pigs? Now, I should not rag on Iowa because there's some of the nicest people in the world there, but Oregon's pretty darn beautiful.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Just have to fix the politics.
Yeah, the politics is real loony in Portland and quite a bit in Eugene, but you get to a lot of areas of the state and people are common sense conservatives and they just scratch their heads and think, why would anyone move to Portland? And so here we are in this metro area. You added a podcast under the heading Stories of Communism. And Eric Segelman, the communism and socialism is on the rise everywhere now amongst young people. And I don't know if people listening know this, but Portland proper has one of the largest chapters of the Democratic Socialists of America. And in case you're wondering, that's just the kinder, gentler way of saying communists. You know, never mind that communism killed 100 million people in the 20th century. So, you know, what prompted you to start this particular podcast, Eric?
Yeah, well, a lot of it grew out of what I observed during my 4 years on the school board, where, you know, we'd have arguments about current events and current decisions and things. But I realized that we were sort of, a lot of people just were not grounded in the basic facts of history. You know, if you think about it, capitalism and the idea that by giving freedom to individuals, somehow everybody can be better off, is kind of counterintuitive. People have this natural instinct to say, oh, well, we might find the really smart people and put them in charge, give them absolute power, and we'll be able to make everything nice and fair. You know, so socialism is in a way sort of a natural instinct for a lot of people. You really have to actively be taught what's bad about socialism, what's good about capitalism, in order to really internalize it. And it seemed to me that just wasn't happening. You know, in our school systems, we've been, I think, as a reaction maybe to the sort of, you know, gung-ho Americanism of the 50s, the school systems for the past half century have been basically concentrating on teaching everything that's bad about America. You know, if you want to discuss, you know, the progress of, you know, World War II, well, then afterwards you have to talk about how the U.S. was so racist and how McCarthyism was bad. You know, if you want to talk about the founding of America, you have to talk about how America was mean to the Indians. People never learn the positive things about America, and they never learn the negative things about socialism and communism.
Right.
And that's really great.
Yes. Yeah, and you're exactly right when you talk about how they believe that you want to find the elites that really are enlightened. When you think of progressives, that's what they're about. They don't like this government of the people, by the people, and for the people. They like the idea of individuals around the country that are what they would think more enlightened, guiding us in what we should do, as opposed to individuals charting their own course and getting somewhere through hard work and integrity and so forth. You have some great stories there on your blog, and people could find it in case they're wondering. Storiesofcommunism.blogspot.com. That's storiesofcommunism.blogspot.com. One of the stories I'd like to start with, that very interesting, it's titled Cuba, Another Side of the Story, Memoirs of a Cuban Childhood by Iris M. Diaz. Would you tell us a little bit about that story, Eric?
Yeah. So Iris M. Diaz was sort of an ordinary Cuban child that went through the communist revolution back when it happened, when Castro took over. You know, and I think, you know, that story was kind of an important one to tell because, you know, she wrote a memoir of her experiences. And of course, it's, you know, not that many people have read it, I think, in comparison to many books criticizing the U.S. You know, she talked about how when she was little, you know, yes, Cuba had its problems, but she was in a middle class family and she had friends who were poor and friends who were richer. And they were, you know, able to get along with each other. And well, of course, some people were poor. The country was making progress. Nobody was starving. And Cuba had a growing economy. It was seen as on its way to sort of reaching a, you know, eventually an American level of prosperity. Castro came in and turned all that upside down. You know, first of all, suddenly neighbors that had been, you know, getting along fine, had been nice to each other before, they sort of were captured in some fever that Castro spread around the country, where they would try to point out, you know, try to root out who the traitors are. They call them gusanos or worms. And everybody wanted to, you know, sort of point at and yell at the traitors and get them to be pushed out of their house because, of course, then the neighbors could take their stuff. And it was like people had lost all respect for human life. And she was kind of shocked by that.
Wow. You write in this one blog post, aside from the political dangers, another consequence of communism was the collapse of basic infrastructure, tiny details that even the poorest can take for granted in a functioning society, like bus services, food in the stores, and a working electrical grid started to fade away. Diaz's family tried to cope with this using humor, creating a set of new jokes based on their situation. You know, it almost sounds like what we've seen in South America with the socialism down there.
Yeah. I mean, I think the situation right now in Venezuela is very similar.
Yes.
Where, you know, they do introduce all these socialist policies, which they say are going to help the poor, but actually everybody, including the poor, ends up poorer as a result.
Yes.
And this is sort of universal wherever there's been socialism. Right. I mean, in socialist countries, you see people driving cars that are 30, 40 years old. And tourists go in and say, oh, isn't that so all quaint and historic? And no, it's not quaint and historic. It's because they're, you know, so living at such a level of poverty that that's all they can get.
Wow. Yes, I'm amazed. Everybody always hears me say this ad nauseum, that I am the granddaughter of legal Norwegian immigrants. But Grandpa had a good life in Norway. There was nothing really wrong with it. But what he knew was he lived on the family farm on a fjord. And yes, his name was Ole. And he knew that he was the one that was going to inherit that land, and his life would be just like his father's and grandfather's and great-grandfather's, etc. There was no chance of anything different. And it wasn't that it was bad. He had good family and so forth, but there was no way to ever get ahead and do any better or anything different. And then he looked at America and he thought, wow, people can go to America. They can work as hard as we do here and they can do something different with their lives. They can get ahead a little bit. They can get more of an education. They can do so many things and build a life for their children to have more choices as well, not just be stuck in the same thing decade after decade and century after century, like the families were there in Norway, which is just crippled under socialism. And it's a beautiful country. My grandpa always loved Norway. Grandma always loved Norway. The whole family, we call ourselves Norwegians to this day, and with a great love of that country, but not of its economic system. That's why they came here to America, which I still say is the greatest nation on God's green earth. And, so when you tell these stories on your site, like another side of the story, Memoirs of a Cuban Childhood, it's really informing people with things they have not heard, Eric.
Yeah. And I think that's really important part of why we're doing this, because I think if you look at, you know, for example, if people say, just using an arbitrary example, if people say Nazis are bad, okay, yes, you've learned in school some abstract facts about them, but also you have sort of a visceral sense of their badness from all the stories that you've been growing up with, right? Probably you've seen Schindler's List, you've seen The Diary of Anne Frank or read it, you've probably played Castle Wolfenstein video games where you shoot Nazis, you probably remember the Star Trek episode where Captain Kirk took over the Nazi planet, and so on, and you know, it's not just academic facts. You really have, when you hear stories, you really internalize these kinds of things. And I think it's really been a failure of our major media and our school system that people just aren't hearing these stories about, you know, the horrors of life under communism. I think if, you know, if we had half as many movies and TV shows and, you know, books read in school about, you know, how bad life is under communism as we had about, you know, the horrors of World War II, then we really would not have all these, you know, public socialists, you know, proudly walking around and writing in our newspapers and things. They would realize how bad that really is.
Yes, we've got so many socialists in Portland proper. It's really sad. And I will every once in a while encounter a younger person that believes in socialism. They think it's so wonderful and lofty. And I think, just like you do with these podcasts, that, oh my goodness, this young person has never had any kind of an education on what that system is really like, about all of the many times they've been employed and failed, about the 100 million who were murdered under communism in the 20th century. Horrible, horrible stories that they don't know. They just don't know. And as you said, Eric Seligman, if it's the Nazis, everybody's like, ooh, those are horrible people. They ought to die or something. They were evil, evil people. Well, a lot of the communists made the Nazis almost look tame. If you look at, read the stories,
yeah, exactly,
of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
On April 22nd, and in case you're wondering, I'm talking to Eric Seligman, and we're talking, he's an engineer in the Portland metro area who started a podcast, and he has been doing a podcast, Stories of Communism, and he writes, the podcast, we review, discuss the firsthand testimony of those who lived through the horrors of communism over the past century. Now, on April 22nd, you wrote, our topic is author Maxim Gorky's visit to the Solovki Island labor camp, one of the founding camps of Stalin's Gulag, as retold in Volume 2 of Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. Very interesting, because I was a fan of Solzhenitsyn, and very interesting stuff. Would you tell us a little bit about that camp and this story, Eric Seligman?
Yeah. So this story, I mean, it's just a classic example of the capacity of intellectuals to rationalize anything, right? So this labor camp at Solovki Island was one of the earliest labor camps of Stalin's Gulag, and prisoners were treated horribly there. They were, you know, not given enough food and clothing. A lot of them had to walk around in underwear, some of them wearing sacks. A lot of them, of course, just died from malnutrition and overwork. But one of them managed to escape to England and started telling people about what he'd gone through. And you know, when this happened, of course, there was kind of an uproar, and people decided, oh, someone has to look into this. And so they decided, well, who's better to look into this than Maxim Gorky? Now, Maxim Gorky at the time was a famous author who had written about the plight of the poor in Russia before the Russian Revolution, before the communists took over. Now, it's interesting because when the communists took over Russia, initially he was kind of critical of them. You know, he said, okay, well, you know, you're going too far. You're acting kind of crazy. But when he wasn't as successful as he wanted to be in his life in the West in exile, Stalin eventually invited Gorky back to Russia and told him, you know, oh, well, we still respect you for everything you wrote. We're going to give you awards and a big mansion and stuff. And Gorky took the deal. So he went back to Russia, but he was still kind of respected in the international community as the, you know, well-known champion of the poor. And people thought, okay, well, this guy should be the one to look into the issues at this labor camp, because if there's something fishy going on there, he'll surely tell everybody because he cares about the poor. You know, and again, he was one of those, you know, popular intellectual socialists and communists who supposedly cared about the poor and, you know, people could trust. So he went to this labor camp on an official tour organized by Stalin. And of course, people in the West were kind of naive to think that anything, you know, real could come out of this when, you know, the tour was organized by Stalin. But he went to investigate whether people were really being maltreated there. And so, of course, the officials of labor camp planned to arrange everything and give him a carefully guided tour where all he would see was things going perfectly. But his tour started out almost like a comedy because his boat pulled in a little bit early to the dock. When it pulled in, there was actually a work crew right near the dock, and a lot of them were in underwear and wearing sacks and, you know, doing heavy labor, you know, chopping logs and things. And so the guards panicked. They realized that if Gorky saw this, then, you know, he might think something was up with the prisoners. So they quickly ordered all the prisoners to lay down on the ground, and they threw a tarp over them. And so Gorky's boat pulled in. And he was standing on the dock talking to various officials for an hour while all these prisoners were laying there, you know, within his line of sight, just all under a tarp, being perfectly still because the guards had threatened to shoot any of them if Gorky noticed them. And so Gorky, after talking to the guards for an hour, moved on with his tour, and it seemed like he hadn't spotted the ruse. Now, what's the chance that you could see a squadron of people under a tarp right in front of you, and they'll be so still that after an hour of talking, you don't notice them.
Right.
But Gorky gave him just enough plausible deniability that he went along with it. So he went and continued on his tour. And next he was taken to the punishment cells, which it was rumored that you know, they'd been brutally torturing prisoners there. Mm-hmm. Well, he got to the punishment cells, and they had nice chairs and benches set up where prisoners were down reading newspapers. And it looked, you know, like very comfortable and nice, like not much of a punishment at all. But then one of the prisoners tried to signal to Gorky that something was going wrong because he held his newspaper upside down.
Oh.
We couldn't possibly be reading it.
Right.
Now, Gorky was walking up and down the line of prisoners, and as he inspected the prisoner, he noticed one of them had the newspaper upside down, so he took the newspaper out of the prisoner's hand and turned it right side up and handed it back to him and moved on with the tour.
Oh.
Didn't say a thing.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but then the sad part came at the climax of his tour, was where he visited the children's camp where they had, can you imagine this, in the labor camp, you know, this was a hard labor logging camp where people were malnourished and undersupplied. And they actually had teenagers there, ages like 12 to 17. And so one 14-year-old boy, is among the model prisoners they selected to, you know, of course, they had some well-decorated cells, which were very different from their normal cells.
Right.
That the guards had set, where they had their model prisoners there who were supposed to show Gorky how wonderful their life was. But finally, one of the prisoners broke from the script. He said, Gorky, everything you've seen today is a lie. Do you want me to tell you the truth? Send all the guards out of here, and I will.
Wow.
And Gorky took him up on it. He sent all the guards out and said, okay, now tell me the truth. And of course, no one else was in the room but the two of them, but the prisoners could guess what he was telling him, right? Probably the truth about all the torture, the malnutrition, the overwork, etc. Now, Gorky must have realized that at this point, his only choice would be to take that boy with him out of the camp right? If he did anything else, that boy would be killed.
Yes.
What did Porky do? He shook the boy's hand, called for the guards to come back in, and went on with the tour.
Oh, my goodness.
So even before Gorky's boat had finished pulling away, that boy had been shot by the guards.
Oh.
Yeah. And then, of course, afterwards, Gorky wrote his report for the world, saying that everything was fine at Slavki Island and that the complaints of torture and malnutrition were overblown.
Oh, my goodness.
And this was the great socialist champion of the poor who, you know, wanted everyone to have socialist governments because you care so much about the people.
Yeah. Well, not so much.
Yeah, this whole incident just sort of shows the capacity of sort of these intellectuals to rationalize. They say, oh, well, socialism and communism is so good for the world that, you know, if a few bad things happen along the way, well, we just have to ignore it.
Right.
And I think this is a classic example of that happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's remind everybody that Stalin was ultimately responsible for somewhere between 20 and 25 million people dying. We're talking about the gulags and so forth that he oversaw. So there is a lot. Wow. This is really such fascinating stuff, Eric. And we're running out of time here. But I want to once again tell people to go to storiesofcommunism.blogspot.com. Eric Seligman has podcasts there linked, and he's got the stories written, and it's fascinating stuff. And Eric, I want to thank you for taking the time to be on the show tonight.
Yeah, great. It's been fun.
It's been a lot of fun. I'd love to have you on again sometime. You're a brother here in the area that is actually trying to, like me, do something to keep this whole place from turning into one big socialist mess. And I thank you for what you're doing.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. The Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. We'll be back next week with more great guests. Until then, this is Tammy Jackson reminding you to wake up. Don't be silent. Let your voice be heard, because we have a country to save.
I cut my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth, and I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preach what I should and I should not do, and the choir sang. Boy, no more. I've seen some things that a man just can't ignore. And this world's gonna see what I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence, you can't steal my